from the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 26th day of April, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Fakes. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll check in on what's been happening in Washington, D.C. Bill Northey will join us, Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Iowa. More importantly, he was in the White House with President Trump yesterday for the signing of the executive order and an hour-long meeting after that. We'll hear more about that meeting from him. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Right here on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes is now here. She's from Stuart Peterson. Thanks, Jackie, for being with us. Looks like it's going to be a wet forecast for farmers across the Midwest hoping to plant some more corn and maybe a few bean acres.
No kidding. I tell you, it's certainly challenging. There's no question about that. You know, and you were just talking about the heavy rains. It looks like it's more than Illinois, of course. It's going to get rain by the weekend. I just wonder if the corn and bean plantings will move forward again this week. I mean, Monday's numbers were a pretty big surprise. But when you look at the market, you certainly don't see any real reaction so far. And I think it's primarily because South American crops right now are, you know, keeping the planting delays on the back burner when you look at traders, because they just, you know, they're more or less trading facts at the moment rather than the what-ifs of what might happen, you know, which is unusual for the marketplace. And if you look at the bigger picture, you got to wonder, you know, are we going to pick up more acreage, Todd, because of this? You know, and I'm not just talking about, I'm talking about acreage in corn and beans, mostly because we've seen such slow spring wheat planting. You know, they usually want to have that in by the 1st of May. And on Monday, North Dakota was only 9% planted compared to 22, Minnesota 14 compared to 41. And South Dakota was really the only one that was ahead. They were at 75 versus 56, you know. So you wonder if we could actually see corn end up being 90.5 million and beans maybe 91.5 million because of the fact that we are slower than what we thought we were going to be, especially when you looked at the pace on Monday for beans.
Hey, you mentioned South America. Maybe we should go back, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but maybe we should go back and visit Brazil just a bit. I bet you've been doing some research.
Well, I'm always following South America, you know, because just like we talked, the markets are a world market. Our market really revolves a great deal around South America. You know, they're basically our biggest competitor in so many ways. And so, you know, last week we talked that the bean prices down there had dropped to $6.65 a bushel. Up to 718. And, you know, so I thought this week we'd probably want to talk about corn. You know, you look at the farmers in Mato Grosso, they've got about 38.7% forward contracted, you know, at an average of 320, okay? Which, you know, it's in line. I mean, you know, it's a little less than us, but it's in line. But when you look at this past month, corn prices have dropped now down to 250. And the government's already pledging money for the subsidy level, which is 241, and the reality is it's actually down around 241 right now. So the scary part is that there's, you know, a lot of speculation that due to the size of the crop, you know, and the lack of enough storage, prices in the harvest time could fall as low, you know, to as low as $1.50 a bushel. And you know what that means, because basically it means that farmers probably, with the subsidy price, will probably sell. At least they'll sell what they don't, you know, what they can't store. And so, you know, when that happens, prices now become a lot more attractive for importing corn into the United States. And the other edge of the sword is that the real has been weakening versus the dollar, meaning, like we've talked in the past, you know, when you look at a board price for us, we know where we're at. Well, if the real is weakening against the U.S. dollar, you know, they're getting more real for every $1. And so a board price that doesn't look attractive to us actually is more attractive to them, which could possibly put them in another position of wanting to make some sales.
Hey, so let's hopscotch around the world just a bit. You keep track of things pretty closely. There was a point in time, and we brought this up last week, that we talked a lot about Greece, but we've got Britain and France. We've got things happening with Brexit, and we've got an election there. We've got Greece and other places, too.
Yeah, Greece, the slippery slope. We talked about that for a long time, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. They are... You know, it's years now that we've been talking about Greece, and they're still fighting with their creditors, basically, is what's coming, is what's happening. And the thing I thought that was interesting this week was that the port of Thessaloniki is being bid on by a German entity, a Russian-Greek investor, a Philippine company, and a Dubai company. You know, they're looking to buy 67% of that port. That port is currently owned by Greece. So what that would do is that would privatize it, 67%, and give Greece money to meet the demands of their creditors. I thought the thing that was probably more interesting was the question, might we see something like this happen in Brazil? You know, Brazil currently owns Porto Paranaguá, Sao Paulo. You know, their economy is certainly not improving very much. And, you know, these lower commodity prices are really, you know, kind of like a nail in the coffin. It's a very difficult situation for them. So I wondered, I guess I'm wondering out loud, could we see them in the same spot that we're seeing Greece right now? You know, and if we want to go over into Europe, we look at Britain and France. Wow, what an interesting situation. You know, we've got elections going on in Britain, and Brexit, of course, is the biggest thing. So you get the argument between the Labour Party and the Conservatives, and of course the Labour Party is saying, oh, we'll have a nice divorce with the EU. You know, I've never heard of a nice divorce, to be absolutely honest with you, but they're going to have a nice divorce with the EU, and they also say they're going to let all the European Union nationals remain in Britain. And the Conservatives basically are on the absolute opposite side. You know, they're saying they've got stronger position in negotiations when it comes to the exit from the EU. I mean, we knew this was going to take a long time for it to happen, but just like there, now we saw France, you know, which is going to be voting on the president. The voters just snubbed the establishment, and they right now have a far right and a novice in a runoff for the presidential election. You know, they seem to be very tired of the status quo, you know, much like what we saw come out of the Brits and the U.S. voters. You know, so this in general impacts, you know, our dollar potentially and possibly our stock market, because anything that changes when it comes, especially in Britain and when it comes to the European Union, impacts us. But let's take a look at something in corn, Todd. I thought that I found that was interesting. You know, South Africa. South Africa is going to have the largest soy and corn crops they've ever had in history, and it's primarily because of good weather. Corn's up 87% over 2016 at a total of 69 million bushels. Now, you know, that sounds like a drop in a bucket compared to us, and it is. Beans are up 50%. They're only at 45 million bushels, so that tells you they don't raise a lot of beans. But, you know, it's still something I think we have to take note of. Our competition continues to grow and doesn't seem to want to stop. And so we have to always be paying attention to what's going on in other places, not just here in the U.S.
Any final comment before I let you go, maybe on wheat?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I heard a comment that the U.S. wheat country is our next Amazon. You know, I can see where the comment could come from, and I don't disagree with it, but I think it seems like a stretch when you want to compare it to the Amazon, because when you look at our total wheat acres for 2017 at 50.2 million, rather pales in comparison to the 504 million acres Brazil has available to expand on. So I guess in my mind, Todd, is the question, you know, do we need more corn and bean acres right now? You know, considering the burdensome supplies we actually have, and will we see those acres maybe go into alternative crops?
Hey, Jackie, thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us today. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, Jackie Vakes. She's from Stuart Peterson. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find all our programming online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post most of our programming in its entirety, not long after it airs on our radio station, and in the case of Commodity Week, we always post it, or most of the time we post it, before it ever airs on a station. We'll record that tomorrow afternoon at around 3 o'clock. Again, you can find it all there at willag.org. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk about the weather forecast, but we'll take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural news first. And then Bill Northey, as I told you yesterday, will join us. He was in on a meeting with President Donald Trump in the White House yesterday, along with the newly minted Secretary of Agriculture. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with food and feeding programs that belong to the United States Department of Agriculture. The majority of Americans support increasing the amounts of money SNAP recipients get each month, and they also very much support limiting what people can buy with those benefits. And according to a large survey released by the University of Maryland this morning, the survey, the first of its kind, was supported by Voice of the People. That's a nonpartisan organization. Overall, 81% of respondents said they favored raising the monthly benefits for single SNAP recipients. Among Republicans, 66% supported raising benefit levels. Among Democrats, it was 93%. Participants were told that recipients that live alone earn on average $542 a month in income and get $140 a month in benefits. There was also strong support for banning soda and candy. More than two-thirds of the respondents favored banning the purchase of candy with SNAP benefits. Soda got a similarly strong rebuke. 73% of respondents voted to ban soda. The findings suggest there is a massive divide between the public and Congress on SNAP issues. There's currently no feasible discussion of raising SNAP benefits. A recent House Agriculture Committee hearing on SNAP restrictions showcased that there is bipartisan opposition to the idea on the committee. Well, let's come back now to the business at hand in Washington, D.C. this week. The U.S. Senate Finance Committee, after weeks of delay, has favorably reported to the full Senate the nomination of Robert Lighthizer to be President Trump's U.S. Trade Representative. Ohio Republican and former Trade Representative in the George W. Bush administration, Rob Portman, stressed the importance of getting Lighthizer confirmed.
We need Bob Lighthizer now, and I think this is a consensus view of all of us around this table, but also of our trade negotiators. I spoke to a trade minister from one of our trading partners over the recess who said, you know, where's the coordination in trade policy? We need to have a USTR to be able to negotiate with the United States of America.
Portman, who worked on several trade deals key for U.S. agriculture during the Bush years, also pointed to comments by a Democratic colleague.
I think the ranking member said it well. Senator Wyden said we need to level the playing field, and USTR is the tip of that spear and is needed to have a consistent and coordinated policy.
Chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, Pat Roberts from Kansas, argued during Sonny Perdue's confirmation as USDA secretary Monday that the importance of trade for agriculture during this long period of low prices could not be overstated. Lighthizer and Labor Department nominee Alex Acosta are the last two Trump cabinet appointees still facing Senate confirmation votes. Acosta is expected to be confirmed yet this week. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, President Donald Trump met with his newly installed Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, and 14 other agriculturalists. Most were either sitting or former state secretaries of agriculture or farmers. Bill Northey, who happens to be both from the state of Iowa, was among them. Well, the president signed an executive order at the meeting creating an interagency task force on agriculture and rural prosperity to be chaired by Perdue. The task force members are all from the federal government and include the U.S. Secretaries of Treasury, Defense, Interior, Commerce, Labor, Health and Human Services, Transportation, Energy, and Education, along with Attorney General Sessions, EPA Administrator Pruitt, and a whole series of others. Its function is to identify legislative, regulatory, and policy changes to promote in rural America agriculture, economic development, job growth, infrastructure improvements, technological innovation, energy security, and quality of life. They are to submit a report to the president within 6 months. Again, Bill Northey, the Secretary of Agriculture for Iowa, was in the room at the White House, but he and the others there were not listed as members of the task force. They spent an hour still with President Trump talking about his expectations, and Northey says sharing some of their challenges and wants.
The president asked folks questions just to introduce themselves, what issues were important to them as they would talk about issues. He'd actively ask them questions about what's this mean, what could we do. Very open, very engaged. Lots of different issues that you would expect came up. I think you've probably seen some of the summary from immigration and regulatory reform, infrastructure, and trade were kind of the bigger issues. When it did come around to my introduction, I mentioned that I was from Iowa. I mentioned that we're a big ethanol-producing state. And before I could even make an ask on ethanol, the president jumped in very quickly and said, you know, I'm a big supporter of ethanol. We want to do everything to support ethanol that we can. And then we had a conversation about that. I mentioned E15 and the re-vapor pressure waiver. We certainly didn't get down in the weeds. There wasn't time for that, but he definitely wanted to reiterate that. And then we talked about Governor Branstad headed to China, how proud he is of him, how excited we are that he can be our representative in China. Certainly the Chinese issues have come up several times in the conversation around the room and re-emphasis of that long-time relationship that Governor Branstad has with the Chinese, as well as the agricultural importance of that relationship between us and China. Both the challenges, but the opportunities, that we do ship a large amount of soybeans there, but we do want to be able to improve our beef trade and ship some beef there. And the president brought that up. Others brought that up in the room as well. And so good conversation about those issues as well as the other issues that folks brought up.
Again, that was Secretary of Agriculture for Iowa, Bill Northey. He was in Washington, D.C. yesterday for the installation of Sonny Perdue as the new United States Secretary of Agriculture, on hand when President Trump signed a new executive order on agriculture, and spent an hour with the president discussing farm-related issues. Not on that list of issues, says Northey, was the 21% budget reduction the president has proposed for USDA's discretionary spending in the next fiscal year.
We met as a group the night before to kind of talk about what issues were important to us that we intended to share, so that we ended up making sure the issues got covered, but we didn't repeat ourselves in the period of time that we had. It came up a little, but for the most part, this group agreed that the president's budget matters. It was focused on, you know, balancing the budget. That's very important. But it really was a signpost as opposed to a real prescription of what was going to happen. We all expect that Congress is very much going to put their stamp on it. The president proposes, as most administrations do, but then Congress really takes the ownership of what happens. And we've heard certainly from Congress that they would take a thorough look and probably do some things very different than what that budget was. So we didn't go very far down the road that this is somehow inevitable and what would the changes be. There is a great interest in Americans, in ag folks, in getting closer to a balanced budget. At the same token, we know that the spending that happens within our agencies matter as well in the ability for the government to respond. And so balancing those two pieces, knowing that Congress is really going to approach that, we didn't get very far down that road.
If you'd like to see the executive order on agriculture signed by President Trump yesterday, a link is posted to our website at willag.org. I spoke with Secretary Bill Northey from Iowa earlier today. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for Wednesday afternoon, the 26th day of April. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I see the rain is going to come. Where and how much and for how long?
Well, our first wave of many is going to work through the heart of Illinois as we go forward through this afternoon and into the evening hours. We will see some strong to severe thunderstorms occurring. It's a pretty good chance that the region from Arkansas through the heart of Illinois into northwest and west central parts of Indiana into western Michigan and eastern Wisconsin will be the area that gets the most significant rainfall. And we'll expect to see some of the total amounts of precipitation to run 1 to 3 inches in this corridor. There could be a couple of counties not too far from St. Louis that will get more than 4 inches of rain from this event alone. And this is just the first one. We will see another opportunity for rain coming up here as we go deeper into the weekend. The next wave will be somewhat broken up. It's not likely to be a real substantial soaker, but this will occur on Friday going into early Saturday morning. And then we'll see the precipitation become more intense again as we go into Saturday afternoon and Sunday, and that's when we get clobbered with the most substantial rains. And we will see, again, some 2 to 4 and 5 inch amounts possibly across the region from Missouri into the heart of Illinois and up into Michigan. The storm system will not even clear the region until we get to sometime early Monday morning. And so it's going to be a pretty stormy, sloppy mess, and if you are in a low-lying area, you should be prepared for some flood conditions, and we'll probably have to get out and replant some of these fields in those low-lying areas as well.
Check a couple of other places for me. First, the hard red winter wheat crop, how bad is this going to be for that? Then probably ought to check the second crop corn in South America, Brazil in particular, and maybe a tad on China if there's anything worthwhile.
All right. Well, in the hard red winter wheat country, there certainly will be widespread precipitation out there as well over these next few days. And probably the most significant weather that's going to happen is it's going to snow like crazy in parts of southeastern and east central Colorado and northwestern parts of the Texas Panhandle. This occurs Friday night into Saturday. Pretty significant snow, anywhere from 8 to maybe 12 inches will accumulate in some of that region, be real stressful for livestock, along with the cold rain that will occur further to the east. But from a wheat perspective, most of this rain shouldn't be very harmful, and the snow either, but we are a little concerned about it getting cold behind it. There shouldn't be any threatening cold temperatures, though, at least through the first half of next week. And then in South America, Brazil's second season corn is set up to run perfectly into mid-May without any problems. They've got plenty of moisture around right now, one more round of rain coming up, and then it should be drier for a while, but they've got subsoil moisture that will carry them through mid-May, and they should have good yields. China, I think the situation there looks pretty good right now. Most of the key crop areas will be planted over the next several weeks, and we will find a pretty good mix of weather prevailing for them as well.
Thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.